Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And a very, very good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Contact. We are all the way live this evening. It's been a couple of weeks. We've had some previously aired programs, and we are live this evening. And I am, of course, your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and also the producer of Contact, Mr. Wes Roberts. Good evening, Wes. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Leslie. Looking forward to our guest tonight as he continues his chapter after chapter.
That is right. As a matter of fact, we are welcoming back to the show for, I believe, it is actually the ninth appearance. And we are talking about the highly noted Toronto-based photographer, videographer, ufologist, experiencer, contactee, investigator, Paul Shishis. And Paul is going to be continuing on with his wonderful, remarkable life story, and I believe we're going to be picking it up maybe around 2006. And he's also going to be, I hope, discussing the myriad of recent sightings that he has been able to document on camera, some of which he's been able to send my way. And as always, I think we're getting the old Contact chat room revved up, and it's going to be open throughout the broadcast this evening, and our dear friend Wes Roberts is going to be monitoring that. And as always, when we are live, the phone lines are going to be open for listener calls in the second half of the program. And those call-in lines are as follows. If you are calling from within Canada, Europe, Australia, and elsewhere, the number is 424-220-1861. If you are calling in from the United States, please use our toll-free line at 888-891-3884. Okay, so I hope we have some interesting action in the Contact chat room, and I hope you folks call in because Paul Shishis is really fascinating. He's going to be joining us in just a moment. And boy, we're just about taking a breath, Wes, after the wonderful experience of the first annual Alien Cosmic Expo. And I know we've just probably ranted about it extensively, but it was an incredible event, and we're very pleased to announce that it's going to be going great guns. Next year there will be another Alien Cosmic Expo, also in the last week in June next year, 2016.
And friends, we can't tell you our little secrets, which are actually big secrets in some cases, but there is a lot already happening about the expo right now, and the organizers, Joanne and Heather and others, are hard at work, and there will be some pretty fabulous surprises,
yeah.
We think.
Some not only Canadian firsts, but international firsts, I believe. So stay tuned. As soon as we can release information, we will. But the Alien Cosmic Expo is on again for next year, 2016, and we couldn't be happier. All right. And before we go any farther, I just want to have a little shout-out of thanks to our wonderful sponsors, because without our sponsors, there would be no Contact Radio. So first, we want to thank the Euphoria organization on Meetup, and their fearless leader, James Borg, is on a little bit of a hiatus for now, but I know he still is keeping his toe in, and he will be back on full-time very soon. So, James Borg, we wish you well, and we thank you for all of your incredible support through the Euphoria organization, and also Euphoria Chronicles on Facebook. So many thanks. We would also like to thank Conspiracy Culture, which is a marvelous resource here in Toronto. It's not just a bookstore. It's really a community center for stretching your mind, opening your mind to all kinds of possibilities, not just conspiracies. They have fascinating books and materials on everything from ancient astronauts to numerology. You name it, they've got it. They have an esteemed lecture series. Patrick White works with both ACE and with Modern Knowledge. And anyway, we just would love to thank them. So, modernknowledge.com. modernknowledge.com. And, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Modernknowledge.com is wonderful, but conspiracyculture.com. And you'll be able to see what's going on there. And, Wes, are there a couple of peeps that you'd like to thank?
Well, yes. In addition to Patrick and crew, the organizers of ACE, who's just been mentioned, Joanne and Heather, Les Such, who is with MUFON and is part of the organization that puts us together. Also, our pal Stu Bundy, who we're liaising with, and I don't think Leslie can really tell you the extent of her liaison quite yet, but it's pretty fascinating what's happening right now.
There's a lot going on with MUFON Canada and MUFON U.S., and we'll be able to talk about that soon. But I did want to mention that we were thanking Joanne and Heather, the organizers of Alien Cosmic Expo. Heather and Joanne are also the organizers of the upcoming Canadian Hypnosis Conference, which is another sponsor of Contact Radio. And this year's dates are the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And that will be happening in Burlington, as always. And you can go online and look up the Canadian Hypnosis Conference. com, and we have lots going on, not just for professional hypnotherapists, but also for alternative practitioners of all sorts and folks who are just interested. So check it out.
And Leslie, that month was what?
That's happening in October.
Wow.
October 23rd, 24th, and 25th at, I believe it's a Holiday Inn in Brantford Conference Center. I'm sorry, not Brantford.
Burlington,
it's a Burlington,
right?
Conference Center. And you can just go online and Google Canadian Hypnosis Conference, and all the info will be at your fingertips. And we'd also like to thank Enchanted Reveries Jewelry. And I haven't talked about Enchanted Reveries for a long time, but I'm really looking to buy some more stuff. So Enchanted Reveries is metaphysical jewelry with a touch of magic to inspire the spirit. Earrings, bracelets, and necklaces handcrafted from semi-precious gemstones, sterling silver, silver-plated pewter charms, and other symbolic and colorful ingredients. So you can check them out on enchantedreveries.etsy.com. We do have an Enchanted Reveries theme, but I see that it is somehow evaporated from our virtual switchboard, so I'm going to have to reconstitute it. And it was written by my talented nephew, Mr. Will Newkirk, who also is the composer of the Contact Radio theme, by the way.
And not saying that there are any technical problems ever with Blog Talk, but, you know, these things happen.
That's right. Okay, I see by our virtual switchboard that our friend Paul is on the line, so let me just pick up that line here, and we can say good evening to him. Hey, Paul Shishis, is that you?
Good evening, Leslie. Wes, how are you tonight?
Oh, we are wonderful. It's a little warmer than I would like, but you know, before too long we'll all be bitching about the snow, because as Canadians we're not really happy unless we're complaining about something. So
well, we Canadians love the four seasons, don't we?
We do, and we squeeze the most out of nobody squeezes more enjoyment out of summer than Canadians. I mean, Canadians are wearing shorts in December. That's how serious we are about it. So
yeah, that's
anyway,
right.
Anyway, Paul,
and,
it's such a delight.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a hot one next week, so I figure this is around the right time to traditionally take vacation for the next 2 weeks. So
I think so.
It'll be good to be near some bodies of water for cooling down.
No kidding. No kidding. That sounds. I'm going on a little getaway to Parry Sound next weekend, so that'll be very refreshing, I'm sure. So, Paul, we are so thrilled that you could join us again. It's been way too long, and I must say, you know, I have appreciated, Wes has appreciated all the incredible, you know, information that you've been sending us, the photographs and everything that's been going on. Now, as I told our listening audience, you know, anyone who is a follower of Contact, who's a regular listener, knows that you've been on the show multiple times, and I'm just going to leave it up to you as to whether you would like to continue with your experiences from about 2006, or if you'd like to go in another direction.
Yeah, why not? Let's stay on the path to 2006, and I'll go to the more prevalent sightings and try and catch up to 2010. And then that means we're only 5 years away.
Okay.
Well, I'll have to have you on a few more times.
That's right. Well, you know, time is not really linear, Paul. We, you know, it's not actually a linear line like we're talking about. It's plastic. It's subjective. So you will be able to join us again to carry on. But for the meantime, so let's take our listeners to where we last left off, Paul.
I remember you were in California, I believe, back in December, and I was talking to Wes where I was involving a sighting, a very prevalent sighting on July 31st, 2007, involving being followed by a black helicopter twice, and also another helicopter that was all white with a red stripe down it. And, you know, in between all the helicopter presences, there was a UFO sighting in the middle of that. And now I'm sort of going to jump back to 2006 on a couple of sightings I'd like to share because, you know, as you say, your regular listeners who have heard, so many sightings that I'm reporting, that there is such a variety of types. And I'd like to share on the different types I'm coming across, and then maybe I can wrap it up that what I've noticed since 2012 of the same types I'm noticing more increasingly during the day, and the similar sightings I'm seeing at night in here in Oshawa, and it just shows me that this presence is becoming more and more, and it continues that I am able to get the some witnesses to some of them, mostly the ones in the day at work, because it's hard sometimes to find a soul when I'm walking the dog 9:30 at night till 12 at night here in Oshawa. But I'll go right into 2006 because you've heard my stories, and you know, because of what I've witnessed, it's sometimes very difficult to keep your eye off the sky to see, you know, what'll pop out next. And so,
yeah, I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, in 2006 at camp, this is at the sandbanks, and I noticed in 2006 to the west a very bright light. Now, it's during the day, and it's very, very high, and it's almost like describing looking at a pea, like it's that small, a pea circle of light high in the sky to the west. And this is the kicker of it all. I noticed this pea of light in the sky during the day at various locations, various directions. Like it didn't seem to have a pattern. It would be to the east, it would be a little to the south, and to the west. And I pointed them out to probably over 15 people, and maybe three or four couldn't see it because it was so high, but those that could see it did confirm to me they saw it. And of course, I'm in wonderment, well, what is it? Is it possible that, can it be a planet, or can it be a star? And I consulted with certain people, and I sort of got a half and half mix in that yes, you can see a planet or a star in the middle of the day. This isn't like later in the evening. It's like in the middle of the day, in the morning, early afternoon, mid-afternoon. And, I was always curious to know what that was. Fact is, it's the first time in sky watching since I really took looking to the sky in 2003. That I'd never seen it before, and it only lasted on and off for a year, up to about 2007. On March 1st, 2007, I tried to catch a picture of it, because this is hard. It's so high. The camera I had back then, I couldn't pick it up on the camera. I used poles. I used rooftops for markers to try and get it in the film. It never showed up, but on March 1st, I did get a picture of a triangle, a black triangle. Which is pretty interesting, when you're trying to take a picture of something else and you catch a black triangle. And that was during the day. So,
was it huge, Paul? Was it one of those Paul, was it one of those really huge transports like the Brewster Triangle? Was it, or could you estimate the size in any kind of way?
Based on the photo, Leslie, it was very small. So when you zoom in on it, and as you get it larger, it starts breaking up in pixels, but it looks exactly like a black triangle. So, yeah, it's very difficult to say. And again, it was literally miles away and probably tens of thousands of feet up. So, you know, maybe it was a loose kite. I really can't tell you. But it was just funny when I was taking a picture of this light anomaly that I'd been noticing on and off for a year that I had caught this picture. And I shared that with various UFO websites, and it's out there. And, you know, I thought, you know, again, here's another strange sighting that went on and off for a year. And I had pointed it out to people, and at least a dozen people had confirmed to me that they had seen it. Half of those were at work, too, that I pointed it out to when I was on break.
Wow. Incredible. So they're very neutral people, I imagine, at work. Or are your colleagues at work kind of now used to the idea that you are having these experiences and they can join in? Or,
well, it's kind of a tongue in cheek laughter with some of them. A couple of fellas there printed off the computer, "You are now entering Area 51 in the door I work at."
Appropriate.
That's kind of endearing, though, in its own way, I guess.
So I take it management may very well know about me, but they take a good arm's length away from me. I don't discuss it with management, but I do discuss it with a number of coworkers. There is one coworker who is very interested. I pointed out two of them in the day. He's had two of his own sightings on his own, and his wife has also had a couple of sightings, and actually she had one which brought her out of her husband to take a look at on July 1st of this year. Or was it July 1st? Yes, it was July 1st. And she filmed it with an iPad, and it was on and off for about half an hour. It was making a figure four around the moon. And she managed to catch a pretty good picture near the moon there, which again confirms that... you know, that I believe during when we have fireworks that they do attract UFOs. Of course, you'll have your mix of Chinese lanterns happening around about. But, you know, the reports of UFOs around New Year's do coincide with appearances of them looking similar to Chinese lanterns. Maybe they mimic them. I've seen one of those myself at Burroughs Creek on July 1st, 2012, where, you know, the orange sphere literally looked to me 30 to 60 feet in diameter. Was not a Chinese lantern due to the nature of size. Also by some of the people that have, you know, are eyewitnesses say, you know, their movements, their speed, even stopping. And also there's been reports of white ones and you know, different red lights hanging about high in the sky. Some might say, well, they're drones or somebody's filming them, but no, I don't believe all of them are explainable from the ground here. I do believe some of them are unknowns, and again, I do believe strongly that fireworks do attract them.
I think you're correct, Paul. I also think that there seems to be, and this is just in my own random research, there seems to be an acceleration of sightings at the equinoxes at midsummer, which of course would be, you know, from anywhere, you know, the month of from June 15th to say July 15th, and also as you mentioned at the winter solstice. Now I don't know whether maybe it's, I've often speculated, is it easier for them to, for whatever reason, be seen or function during the solstice times, or are things happening in the ionosphere that during the solstice times that make it easier for us to see them? I'm not sure.
Yes, and probably to all the above you've mentioned, and you know, who's not to say also too that I've read too that when Earth and Mars are at their closest point, we seem to have UFO flaps around the world. You know, when you study ufology, there've been certain years where there's been flaps. I touched on this with Wes about the last show we did in December of 1967. How, you know, there was a flap in North America. The Shag Harbor crash happened October 4th.
That's right.
And there were some interesting cases in 1967. And, of course, that was my very first UFO sighting at age 8. And, it also goes to 66. 64 was a flap. Things were happening in the 50s as well. And, of course, we can go further back to the Foo Fighters during the end of the war, of those being cited. So, there seems to be a pickup, as you say, in my eye, since 2012. Just by commonly myself noticing this or maintaining, 15, 30 sightings a year I'm having, but the reports are staggering, even here in Ontario and around the world, where you could almost go to each day and just Google the date and UFO, and somebody's got a story or a video clip or some still shots. So,
That's right.
It is really growing right now. And, who's not to say the Mayans were right that, a change is coming?
Yes. Well, I think certainly, everything is vibration. And as more and more people become aware or even open their minds to the possibility of other beings or beings we're related to or whatever, however you want to conceive of it, that raises the vibration, and maybe that even makes it easier for them to manifest.
That could well be. People now in their conscious state, I just watched an alien thing on the History Channel or National Geographic. And it's in the back of somebody's mind. And, I think maybe, as you say, from that consciousness, thought about it. And one night, one day, somebody goes, oh, my God, what's that? And, of course, a lot of them could be, misidentified or identified UFOs or craft that we have here.
But percentage.
Yeah, because, we're now into a state now where new technologies with drones, I'm sure the military-industrial complex are working on many different toys as well, that can be misidentified. And, we heard the thing, it's just over a year ago, how there were misreports from the U-2 plane that people made errors thinking they were a UFO. But there does seem to be a surge happening more and more, and we're getting some pretty good pictures here and video clips, and a lot of serious testimony from, more than one or two people, where you have groups of people now. And we're now, today in 2015, there are many more than what there was when I started getting into it in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So many more people, though we're still a very small bunch, but it does seem to be slowly growing. And for anybody studying ufology or even, looking at the whole picture, I would still say it's very, very low of to say as many really knows what's going on as 0.1% of the population of this planet, who are absolutely, dedicated ufologists who study it. And are actually seeing them as well, and photographing them. Some going to the extremes of telescopes, and we've seen some marvelous stuff there. As even with NASA on their live feeds that they've shut off, a recent one there surfaced 3-4 weeks ago there with NASA with three objects that they shut off the live feed.
The Pluto exploration, or is that what you're talking about, Mars stuff?
This was out in our orbit, coming towards our planet.
Oh, my, yeah.
So, they are growing, and it's amazing the different types we're seeing. So, it just shows you that, as you were saying, people coming in contact by opening up and thinking of the idea that it might also be conditional, too, to the state of our time and space where we are right now, dealing with, waves of energy that are coming from our sun, cosmic
waves
that are coming from other star systems that tweak or prolong that vibration that's a little more different in our realm that we've been used to, that's, changing all around us. And so, maybe the presence is becoming more obvious from not just one type of entity or level of intelligence, but others that are starting to come into our realm and starting, maybe even taking an interest, looking down from what's below them to us. It's just becoming very, very interesting. And like you say, I think the key words are light vibration.
Indeed, Paul. In fact, as you mentioned, these marvelous waves of photonic energy that are spewing, right out of the center of the Milky Way, I think it's very possible that our pineal glands, which are the only photosensitive gland in the human body, can be reacting or being stimulated by all this photonic energy. And maybe that's just part of, as you say, what's supposed to be happening.
Yes. Who's not to say we had the spell, 36,000 years ago or 3,600 years ago I wasn't there to remember, but, they say we've gone so through, I believe this is our fourth civilization, and it seems today our civilization has lost its way with ourselves and the very nature of things with inside the bounds of the earth and outside it.
Yes. Well, to quote Counselor Deanna Troi from Star Trek Next Generation, when she was explaining about Earth's history, she said, "Once we got rid of greed and avarice, a lot of other terrible things went along with them." So that's our job now. It's greed and avarice, the greed and avarice of a few that have polluted democracy, polluted our way of life, polluted spirituality. And these guys aren't going to get away with anything much longer. I really have a feeling. So I think I think we are all here by a plan, by a communal plan to be here for these exciting times. And you're one of these people, Paul, that has come in with your unique DNA that enables you to have these visual experiences and other kinds of experiences on a regular basis. In 2006, now, what was going on with you? Where were you in your emotional self? Were you receptive to having experiences at that point, or were you feeling fearful, or what was going on?
I was receptive of what was going on around me. The fear, it was a real shocker in 2003. 2004, and in 2005, I started calming down. I started accepting it more and more, and I think maybe that's the connection, too. It's the acceptance of not to be fearful about it, but to be more interested, more intrigued, curious. Somebody's knocking on the door here, and, you're to the point because of having such a mountain of experiences. You're waiting for a contact, Leslie. That's the way it feels for me, because they have been, for example, in April of 2006, I came outside for a cigarette. I'm on the deck, and it's cool, and it's a clear sky, and I said out loud, "Show me a sign if you're watching me." And I'm looking, and after a few seconds, I see a falling amber light to the west. And suddenly it went to the right, zoomed off, and after like probably 3-4 seconds, when it made a hook of a turn, and it was gone, I'm just like, wow, just what I said, show me a sign if you're watching me, and I had that display at that time in April in 2006.
Mm. Well, that's fantastic. And was that at nighttime, Paul, did you say?
That was at nighttime, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was like an amber, kind of like falling star. Not like a meteor that streaks. It was like falling. And then it did a hook to the north for 3-4 seconds. Like it looked like a few hundred yards and just disappeared. So to me, that didn't look like a falling star if it did that.
No, certainly not. A gravity-defying falling star? I don't think so.
No. Oh, yeah. And so as I continue to try and get as many as in tonight of the variety as I describe them, you'll understand where I'm going with this because they just continue to be different as well. And, you know, people who are listening might be able to relate to one or two that they've seen, you know, in nature or appearance. I had one at camp again. I had seen a lot at camp, at the Prince Edward County. And, you know, it was exciting to go to camp to not just fish and hang around the beach and have the best of food on a barbecue, but to be sky watching at night. And, well, I had a very prevalent sighting in late July, early August in 2008. Myself and my youngest son were fishing away from the area we were in, probably about 13 kilometers away in another lake. And we just finished fishing because it was getting dark, the mosquitoes were moving in. And so we turned around, we're walking down the long dock towards the car parked on the road there. And I could see, and confirmation of my son, of course, could see a fire in the sky. It's the best way to put it.
Wow.
Like an orange flame sitting in the sky. It was low, probably around 500, less than 1,000 feet anyway. And I ran to the car, opened up the back of the seat there, the door, and pulled out my camcorder. And I looked for it. It was gone.
Oh, boy.
Like, you know, like you got to ask yourself, what was that? And
God,
I'm telling
like
you, it was just like looking at an orange fire.
Did
there,
you have any kind of...
I watched it for 30, 40 seconds, and I ran to the car.
Did you have any kind of feeling? You know, I know sometimes when you see craft and sometimes when other people have seen craft, they really get a feeling of an intelligence being involved, you know, like they get almost a psychic message of here we are. Did you have any kind of feeling of beings or presences or anything esoteric like that?
Well, yes, because based on here we are in 2008 and with all the sightings I've had, it was like anything such, be it small, be it large, be it plasma, be it light, be it translucent, you know, it has been, you know, it's been like blazing a path each time to witnessing something. To me, I get very excited. You know, some, of course, are not as fantastic as like looking at something that's miles in diameter that just knocks you back. When you talk about there's an intelligence way higher that you notice, but each sighting, the variety has been knocking me at me, like telling me that I do believe there are various levels of intelligence happening right now, not just one, but many.
Yeah.
And like I'm talking, craft not included, when we're talking pure light. Appearing
right
in front of your eyes and disappearing.
Right. Craft not necessary.
You know, it's been very reinforced with me having the witnesses and since 2005 acquiring a camera because the witnesses are frightened. Thank you, Hollywood. And of course, you know, their peers of ridicule, you know, from their companions or friends because we can't say that much of the population has seen a UFO yet. I would say in ratio, maybe 1 out of 10 or 12 people have seen one in Ontario.
Yeah.
And,
well,
you know,
yeah.
It's all, when you look at the that ratio, there's still a large number of people who still haven't seen one. And, of course, you know that all the investigators coming out now since 2003, getting involved in MUFON, getting involved such as your show or other websites, we are the people who are witnessing something here, a phenomena.
Yeah.
And we keep circling, wanting some answers, and the circle seems to be getting bigger, that more and more people are seeking answers, because there's a lot of wrongs going on of how we've been conducting ourselves on this planet in many ways. And I think we're stretching our hands out for some help here. Maybe we might even perceive it as the cosmic cop, or you know, even those that are you know, borderline religious might be seeking the help of angels, you know, even archangels.
Well, there's no reason we can't reach out to our you know, to our family, you know, because there is no doubt in my mind at this point, from what we know about hematology, from what we know about DNA, there's no doubt in my mind that we were not upgraded, influenced, infused with DNA from elsewhere. There is no missing link. There is a huge jump from Miocene apes into Cro-Magnon man. A seamless jump. In the human genome, we are the only mammal on the face of the earth that can have over 6,000 things go wrong with our genetic code. Now, this is anomalous on our planet. There is no other mammal that can experience anything like the genetic problems that we have, which says also that there were some imperfect parts of this process that we have gone through. We have dueling blood types. We have Rh negative. No one knows where that comes from. I'm an Rh negative person. Only 5% of the Earth's population is Rh negative. And it's so we have really, I believe, and not to mention the elongated skulls and the studies they've done on the mitochondrial DNA, there is absolute evidence that we have been infused, and that I believe many of the benevolent beings that are showing themselves now are our family. And are trying to help us grow up just the way you parent a teenager. You have to give them some freedom so they can fuck up, pardon me, and learn. You know, that's why we're on Blog Talk Radio, so I can say the F word every once in a while, at least once a year. But
yeah,
anyway,
well,
I didn't mean to go
say,
off on a tangent.
We need to understand the wrongs to understand the rights.
You got it.
We can now clearly see the wrongs, and now we need to adjust together in the rights. That's good for all of mankind. And
that's
show
right.
Truly the spirit of love from the heart, not from the greed of the body or the greed of the mind of materialism, but truly, you know, how much we can accomplish together if we put down the swords, if we put down, you know, the bullets and the helmets and spread the resources fairly to everyone, you know, to hear, you know, the stats on even 80 families that have, you know, more wealth than 2.5 billion people. I mean, something's wrong here.
It's crazy, isn't it? I'm going to check in with Wes here just for a moment to see if we have any questions from the chat room. Wes, is there anybody chiming in with a question for Paul this evening?
There isn't anybody chiming in with a question, but I've been shooting out questions, and I think I'll pose one to Paul. And that's got to do with, let's take a scenario, Paul, where you're in a study that has multiple witnesses in the same location. You've been in these studies many times. Are other people in touch with these craft, or is it only you?
Okay, so it has been spreading around me. For example, I went to pick up my computer. I've been telling the guy, showing him pictures. Well, guess what? The guy at the video shop there, who's a few miles north of me in Oshawa here, he told me he had a sighting, his first one, three red lights up around Curtis and Highway 2. So as it spreads to other people, I bring attention to, and who I've had as witnesses, yes, there has been even a further smaller percentage of folks who are noticing more than one UFO sighting, so they're becoming multiple witnesses on their own now, too. And again, those witnesses are starting to have the odd witness, like I told you about the fellow at work, whose wife is noticing them as well. So it does seem to spread more and more. But right now, to say how many they have, are they having dozens a year or dozens a year? I don't know too many of those yet. But I have spoken to a couple of people, and some I haven't in a while, but just to recollect the stories of a woman who I went to Tim Hortons to, brought this to her attention in Whitby. She later, at 1 o'clock, walking her animals, she's seeing triangles hovering.
Oh, wow.
So it does spread, and I'm wondering, too, Paul, if you can go one further than that and say, like, you're able to send a thought out there into the universe and say, if there's anyone there, give me a sign. Are any of the other witnesses able to do what you can do?
Yes, but right now it's limited to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it hasn't been a lifetime for them. So I guess when you look at the spectrum of some that have had only one later on in weeks or months who will tell me the story, for example, one guy, a courier, had seen a hovering aircraft in the day, a commercial airliner with blue lights on the wings, and it was hovering there. And,
wow.
And he went underneath it, and he thought it was really weird. And, of course, he didn't tell his wife about it. But, you know, he had something very different there. And we've heard of the reports of hovering airliners, you know, around the world, mostly in North America, I think. And then you have a group of people who have had multiple sightings. And, you know, one guy I brought attention to, the guy where I went swimming in sauna, he is a young fella. He noticed one at his mother's place there, and she lives out in the Caorthas, that he noticed a red light sitting there above a tree, and he's watching it because he was first disturbed by the noise. He came out and he saw it, and then it took off. And then he's had other countless sightings. So, yeah, he's aware of something going on, as well as a young fella, a neighbor across the street. He's now around 28. I showed him his first UFO sighting here at home and during the daytime in Oshawa on a Saturday. I believe that was August 30th, 2003. And since then, and he's a hunter and fisherman, he's noticed a lot at night and during the day. He's also works in a tower in Oshawa where he saw one in the day, like a disc coming down, dropping like a leaf towards the ground
wow.
a few miles away.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's a low to a high spectrum where in the higher ones where people are seeing more and more, they're not so many. More in the middle would be somebody who's seen one or maybe a couple more than that. And, yeah, it's like I say, it is spreading more and more. And, of course, you know, people may be taking interest in it more when they see something they can't explain. You know, and, of course, the broadcasting now with, you know, various documentaries on TV, they're putting a lot of good information out there, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a few years ago, you would not have seen this kind of programming that we now are seeing. UFOs declassified, you know, all, et cetera, you know, area, a Hangar 18, which is about MUFON. That's one of my favorites. So, there are incredibly great.
And even Leslie Obama admitting Area 51's existence.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the deathbed confessions are incredible, and also, you know, people like Dr. Edgar Mitchell coming out and establishing his own experiencer organization. I mean, you know, we have there's an incredible amount of stuff going on that, and I think that your figures about people who are seeing craft or having these experiences are maybe a little conservative. I think it may be more than a 10% or even a 20%. And people are now feeling more safe to sort of come out of the closet, as it were. I know that there are so many experiencers now coming forward that, that speaking of MUFON has had to open up an entire division devoted to working with experiencers. That's being it's being headed up by Kathleen Marden, who of course is Betty Hill's niece, of Betty and Barney Hill. She's an author, written many books with Stanton Friedman. So I think that things are really accelerating, Paul.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to this August. I think there's going to be some good sightings this month in August coming up. And, this is a great opportunity for listeners or anyone to enjoy. We've had some pretty good blue skies happening. Mm-hmm. My last recent daylight sighting was July 19th here at home for about 5 minutes. It was very, very high. It was white. And it was moving extremely slow. So because of the altitude and its movements, I do not believe it was a balloon. And it was very hard to capture on film because of its altitude. I've seen in Scarborough for probably since 2012 to today that there are these very high stationary white objects, or unless they're lights, that will sit, most of them will sit stationary and will be twinkling on and off, like shimmering a light. Mm-hmm. And they average, when I see them, are, could be anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. Very hard to photograph two of those. But that's telling me that there's a new kid in town. Or a new model, it just looks to me, the main purpose is surveillance.
Yeah, it could be certainly of terrestrial origin. There's so much going on. There's been so much reverse engineering. I think some percentage of what people are seeing is in fact simply reverse engineered technology, or technology that's been given to us that we are using to monitor, our own people, as it were. Not to be paranoid, but that's the military. I mean, once the military gets involved, and the military has been deeply involved since Roswell, that we know how the military operates. They have an agenda.
Absolutely. And these ones that we're seeing that are ours. Are probably could be multi-purposely used for looking for unknown aerial anomalies that could be reported in the area, and they're observing, and they're probably freaking out because of all the activity going on. They know when to dispatch a conventional aircraft, be it a helicopter, be it a jet, be it any arsenal of tools. Of aircraft they have, and we've heard of jets chasing them, helicopters chasing them. I've got pictures of the spheres in the day that I've seen in front of helicopters, and when I say spheres, I'm not talking I might have caught some kind of a white seed or something. No, they're bright lights, and they're like their shape or nature is like orb, and there seems to be a lot of activity going on around here, and I assume around the world because of the reports that are happening.
In fact, this is the time of year. Every day for the past week, I think there has been a new complex crop circle that has manifested in, it's always like the Wiltshire area of the UK, not very far from Stonehenge, not very far from Newgrange. I mean, it's a hotbed of activity for crop circles. And as you said, interestingly enough, you know, we had a chance to talk to Patty Greer quite a bit at ACE recently, and she's appeared on the show. She's a crop circle expert. But, you know, what seems to be creating these crop circles are orbs of energy that seem to actually come from the earth. I'm not saying that they're obviously they're manipulated. They're manipulated by intelligence or thought or whatever. But it could be that some of the lights that we're seeing are, in fact, existing earth energy that can be utilized for a specific purpose.
Oh, sure. Why not? And I have seen the footage of the white orbs that somebody caught in the morning, in the wee hours of the morning, where they went around and formed the crop circles. And I've seen Patty Greer's presentation. And of course, you know, we can see the design. A lot of it is sacred geometry.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the trail I'm on to more and more is the sacred geometry and angles and the golden ratio and the Fibonacci numbers.
Mm-hmm.
All seem to be coming together. It's like a mathematics, an extension of mathematics. And, of course, it has to do with probably physics as well.
And wouldn't that be the language of the universe, Paul? Wouldn't that be the real, the true language of the universe? Wouldn't it be quantum physics, something that we can all understand, all the beings can understand, no matter what the linguistic issue or even if they're telepathic beings, this is something that we can all understand. I think it was Nikola Tesla said that if we could understand the power of three, then the universe would unfold, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. But again, we're talking about sacred geometry, and we keep getting these messages over and over and over again. I know that Patty Greer maintains that some of these crop circles are chemical formulas. They are the representations of different molecules, all designed to help us, to give us a gift to help us repair the earth. That's her point of view.
I agree 100%. It's unfortunate the crop circles have diminished here in Canada. They were very high in 2002 and 2003. That I noticed, and I've even been in a crop circle in Ash Grove, August 2004. Very interesting, and you know, there's been a lot of reports in these areas too of UFOs. So, but it's just something that they've suddenly sort of, well, not suddenly, it's been years now. Mm-hmm. I think 2005, it really petered out to present here in Ontario. And, of course, the UK continues on, and it looks well that Italy has had its share of crop circles as well, and some of them very similar to the UK sightings of crop circles, too.
Yes, I think there is a great. I think the beings that are communicating that way are doing it all over the place. I do. And how benign is it? I mean, it's really a lovely and benign communication. It couldn't get more benign than that. I mean, these are not beings that are trying to terrify us. This is how much more gentle could something be than an image of love and symmetry or whatever that is in a rural setting without even harming the crop. Just bending it. I mean, you know, what could be more benign?
Yes. It's an interesting phenomena that's connected into UFOs and into higher intelligence. And you know, something has been reaching out to us. And of course, you know, the establishment, they don't like that. But I don't think soon they have any alternative, because, you know, it's like darkness. When light hits darkness, what does darkness do? It scampers.
That's right. there's absolutely nothing that they can do with the incredible amount of energy and the higher vibrations that are going on. Now, I'm astonished that we are, I can hardly believe this. It seems like we've been talking for 5 minutes. We have just about 5 minutes left. So, Paul, did you want to just tell us real quickly about a couple of any salient things or recent things, and we'll have you back on again real soon in a couple months to continue on.
Okay. I'll fast forward to what I'm noticing more of at night. And that is, and this is here in Oshawa, that when I do walk the dogs or I go out on the deck, have a cigarette, and, you know, it could be anywhere from 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, even past 12, 1 o'clock, I've seen stars that anybody would perceive as a star or planet that wasn't there before. And you're looking at it for 10, 15, 20 seconds, and it will suddenly just close up and disappear. Or it will start to move for about 5, 10 seconds and fade out, gone. And again, since 2010 to present, at night, I've seen a lot of white slow lights. They don't flash, they jerk, they can brighten up, they could fade right out. Now, I don't know if there are, but I'm seeing a lot of this, Leslie. Seeing a lot of these white lights.
Yeah.
Lots of them, and they're single white lights. Some nights I might have three separate sightings from different directions. But they're low, they're slow, and they don't make a sound, and they don't flash. All white. The best description you can give it in shape is like an orb.
So these are the new kids in the neighborhood.
What I've noticed here, yeah, and it's increasing too.
All right.
All
right.
I'm trying to film them. You need a tripod for sure, because even when you take a still shot, you're going to have that little bit of shake. You're going to get a little squiggly, white squiggly.
Yeah. Well, I know they will be short revealing themselves.
And I'd like to thank James Borg and Charlie Condolini from Euphoria Chronicles, along with the filming of Greg Summers.
Oh, yes.
Of Variety Store Production of doing an interview with me, a cross section of my life where I've been filmed for over an hour. That's a first. It was a big project, and it was a very successful project.
And that wonderful interview with you can be seen by simply logging into Euphoria Chronicles. Those are all available. You can see those on YouTube on Euphoria TV, I believe, if you just go onto YouTube. And we do thank Greg Summer, Variety Store Productions. I'm sorry, we love him. And as you said, a big shout out once again to our dear James Borg and Charlie Kundalini and the rest of the folks at Euphoria. Well, Paul, thank you so much. Can't thank you enough. As always, not enough time. It's been fabulous to talk to you. And I look forward to getting together perhaps another Skywatch before the summer's over. Let's hope.
I'd like that. And I'd like to thank both you and Wes for all you've done for that extended open ear, hearing, you know, a long time of sightings since 67 to present. I've almost got them all out now. There's still probably about another 30 of different things to tell you. But,
all
you
right.
know, I've just about got there, and I thank you because there's no other interviewer who has been able to take so much information that I've been able to give. And I thank you for
well,
that.
Bless
my,
head, you, Paul.
My hat's off to both of you, really.
Bless you, and thank you so much. And, Paul, if you ever decide to quit smoking, you know who you're going to call, the smoke buster. That's me.
Well, I've got a plan in November to a date, and I plan to give them up again because, they do cause imbalances with your smell with your pace, and more so, they make you tired.
Well, you know, when you're ready, you're ready. And whenever you're ready, if and when you're ready, I'm here to help pro bono.
Thanks very much. I'll be calling you on that date, and I'll be giving updates.
All right, Paul. Thank you so much again, and we're going to say goodnight for now. Okay, goodnight, Paul Shishis. Thank you so much.
Good night to you, my friends, and sleep well and enjoy every day that passes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
same
Paul.
To you. Good night, Paul. All right, that was our dear friend Paul Shishis. We're just about to say goodnight. Remember, we are not alone. Next week, Mr. Robert Mason, the head of the CE5 Protocol Pod from Perth, Australia. Can't wait.
We're arranging for it this week. Join us, folks.
Next week, 9 p.m., for Mr. Robert Mason of the CE5 Pod of Perth, Australia. Good night, folks. Good night, Wes.
Good night, Lisa.
And we are not alone.